The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I think we need to keep bringing it up. You're actually going to support a guy that has promised you he's going to be a dictator on day one. He's going to assassinate his political opponents. He's going to arrest members of the press who are critical of him, terminate the Constitution, assassinate the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Do they not see that this guy is promising? He's promising to be an authoritarian. We know who Trump is. This isn't about Trump. This isn't about Trump. This is about those people who are deciding, instead of choosing democracy, American democracy, they're going to choose Donald Trump.
And by the way, out there, well, that hat that you keep wearing, that red hat that says Make America Great Again, that tells people that you go along with this. So you might as well just put a swastika on the hat.
When you have someone who says, I'm going to get rid of all criticism, I'm going to get rid of anything that's dissenting, this should make everybody really scared. One of the great things about this country is that you can stand here and say, you know what, I don't like how the country's being run. And you know that nobody's going to come and snatch you up for saying that.
And the other thing, Nicole, I don't think we do enough of is talking about how Trump is worse today than he was in 2020 and much worse than he was in 2016. The things he says are more extreme. He celebrates more the dark corners of dictatorship. He says he would eliminate the Constitution.
Promotes the mass deportation of migrants, standard Trump fascist fare at this point. Donald Trump was proud that someone once compared him to Adolf Hitler. As per usual, much of the media is downplaying the fact that the Republican nominee is once again using Nazi language. And they have a reason to like what he's offering. He has promised to grant immunity to all police officers so they are free to kill anyone, like George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Roger Fortson. What is it going to take to get the media to take seriously the fact that Donald Trump is acting like a Nazi, talking like a Nazi, and now posting like a Nazi?
The sounds of fear. You can tell they're afraid that they're about to lose their grip on power. The desperation. I love the one lady saying, you know, one thing we don't do enough of is tell you just how horrible Donald Trump is. No, that's all that you do. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's fast-moving show. So much to get to on the program. You can get to the live video stream of this program at trumpetdaily.com or just go to the Rumble channel, rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. You've got to go to Rumble to give us the thumbs up because there's already a Debbie Downer in the midst of our crowd. We've got a thumbs down and we haven't even started. So we've got our work cut out for us. Today, we're going to premiere a new promotional video that's been put together for Celtic Throne. That'll lead off the second segment of the program. It's about 3 minutes. Very exciting and fun to watch. The crew, all the families, the performers, the musicians, they left the campus just about an hour ago. They're on their way to Shreveport, Louisiana, where they will be performing tomorrow night. So tomorrow night kicks off their summer tour. Just go to CelticThrone.com. And you can get to all of the information that you need to secure tickets. They're going from, I think, Shreveport to Baton Rouge, Mobile, Alabama. There's 3 shows, I believe, in Florida. They're going to be performing at the Ryman again in Nashville. That's the Southeast tour. And then they've got the Southwest tour after a brief one-week stop back here at home. So coming back to these deranged lunatics that say he's Adolf Hitler. One thing about this is they can certainly see Biden's plummeting poll numbers. That's another message that comes through loud and clear with a cold open like the one that we just played. They know. They see the campaign stops. They see all the gaffes. Play the, I forget what this was. It was yesterday. But instead of the hula hoops, you've got the round tables. This is about 30 minutes before the president, the fake president, is about to show up. Is there any sound? Does it show that guy I don't know if it shows the guy who basically gets in front of the camera and he's like, yeah, we're about to hear from the president of the United States. Can you feel the excitement in the air? There he is.
The president of the United States is supposed to be in this room. Feel the excitement?
There is no excitement. There is no energy. And then, of course, it's perfect when the fake president shows up because he's lacking in the energy as well. Listen to Jesse Waters from last night talking about the many corrections that the White House staff had to make to the official transcript of a speech that the president gave. The fake president gave a speech, and they're basically correcting it right and left, even though it's off of the teleprompter. This is clip three.
The White House forced to correct President Biden on their official transcript of his speech to the NAACP, not once, not twice, but nine times. The White House crossing out more of Biden's screw-ups than when Dana had to proofread my last book. Kind of amazing, given that the speech was given on the teleprompter and not off the cuff.
And when I was vice president, things were kind of bad during the pandemic. I'm humbled to receive this organization. It truly inspires me. Saving millions of families, $800,000 in premium, $8,000 a year in premium. We're cracking down on corporate landlords who keep rents down. The mortality rate for black moms who have nearly three times more likely to die. He calls the erectionists who stormed Capitol Hill patriots. Donald Trump has said if he loses again in November, there will be, quote, bloodshed. The NAACP spirit endures.
It's funny, we make jokes, but he's in bad, bad shape. We're watching him degrade every single day. It's painful to watch. I know people have said it before, it's elder abuse. Like, I don't know how Dr. Jill could just go, yep, let's just push him right out there.
He's exactly right. It's elder abuse. They're pushing him out there as the puppet. And of course, the dear leader is working masterfully behind the scenes to fundamentally transform the United States of America. That's what's on display every day. Every day. Well, when he comes out of the basement. This is from Robert Reich at the Guardian. When voters tell pollsters they think Trump is stronger than Biden on foreign policy or the economy, the strength they feel comes from the emotions that Trump stirs up. Rage, ferocity. Here's Hitler again. Rage, vindictiveness, anger. Emotions connected to brute strength. Reich says here, Biden projects strength the old-fashioned way through mature and responsible leadership. Okay, got it. Got it. Yeah, the old-fashioned way. He's projecting strength. This is at The Guardian. It says, but mature and responsible leadership doesn't break through today's media and reach today's public nearly as well as brute strength. Further on, their best response is to draw the starkest possible contrast between Trump's unhinged childishness and Biden's competent adulthood. So on the one hand, we're told that he's competent, that he's projecting strength the old-fashioned way, Joe Biden, that is. And then on the other side, we're told that Donald Trump is Hitler. Listen to Joe Scarborough as he tries to explain away Joe Biden's unpopularity. Clip two.
Joe Biden, you know, it's never going to look like Beatlemania when Joe Biden steps off a plane going to an event. Joe Biden's about normalcy.
Yeah, he's just completely normal. And, you know, it's not going to be Beatlemania. People aren't going to show up. If they show up in a few hula hoops, that's okay. He's normal. He's strong. And meanwhile, Trump is Hitler. You may have seen some clips on social media, this movie coming out about Donald Trump, or maybe it's already out. I don't know. It's called The Apprentice. But they've got this brutal rape scene in the movie. In the movie. How do they get away with this? If you were to make a movie about Barack Obama and put a scene like that in there about him, how soon do you think the DOJ would be right on top of that story? With Trump, I mean, you can have Caesar performed at Central Park every night. And then the stabbing and the decapitation and all the and the crowd just roaring in support. It's from Variety magazine. The rape scene isn't the only one that Trump may find objectionable. It says the 2024 presidential candidate also is depicted popping amphetamine pills, getting liposuction, and having surgery to remove his bald spot. So there you go. Exactly what you would expect from Hollywood. These people truly are sick people. They are mentally deranged. They can't think straight. The comparisons to Hitler. You've got the comparisons to Caesar. What kind of a message is that sending? I think The Economist is now on board with that. Wasn't it The New Yorker not that long ago? Yeah, there's Caesar. There's Caesar on the cover page. What happened to Caesar? The story that broke yesterday. I forget her last name offhand, but she's following the documents case. Julie Kelly. She's following the documents case down in Florida. And we learn, thankfully, Judge Cannon is there exposing this. We learned that as part of the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago, that they went in there. They went in there expecting a gun battle, basically. They had the authority to shoot to kill. This is over documents. Some would say napkins, memorabilia. Here they're in these communications with the Trump team. Okay, you can keep that. We need you to return this. And then they have this pre-dawn raid. There's some reporting today that Trump was supposed to be there. I mean, this is chilling, terrifying. And so to hear James Comey talking about how if Trump comes back, he's going after the DOJ. You mean Barack Obama's DOJ that turns loose the FBI saying, hey, if you need to shoot to kill, go ahead and do it. This is Banana Republic stuff. Richard Palmer at the Morning Brief. FBI agents raiding Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home were prepared to use deadly force, according to unsealed court documents published on Twitter yesterday by Julie Kelly. It says the FBI put out a statement saying this was standard policy. Yeah, it happens all the time, doesn't it? In Barack Obama's DOJ, that may be true. Here they're going after, I mean, Peter Navarro was an economic advisor for Donald Trump. They put him in chains at an airport. I believe he's the one. The rest of them, you know, banging on the door at 6 a.m., going after all the attorneys, as I said on yesterday's program. Christina Bob, she was arrested. If you defend Donald Trump, if you're an attorney on the wrong side, you better look out. You better watch over your shoulder. Because the dear leaders, I mean, we've been saying war in 24. If the FBI is ready to go into Mar-a-Lago, would they do, again, just put the dear leader in that place? He took documents. Joe Biden took documents. Joe Biden, he had them all over the world. Everyone does it. And in the case of Donald Trump, he had presidential authority on the way out to declassify, to take what he wanted. Joe Biden never had that kind of authority. It says here, this is, well, just listen to James Comey as he's supposed to be a good Republican, right? And speaking of documents, he helped himself to confidential documents and then leaked them to the New York Times. This is Comey on one of the networks yesterday, clip one.
When you think about a second Trump administration, what do you think the implications would be for the FBI?
Oh, serious. For the Justice Department and the FBI, because Trump is coming for those institutions. He knows their power, and I think he has regrets that he didn't work hard enough to corrupt them last time. So he's coming for them, and that's a danger for all Americans. I don't care how you feel about Joe Biden, you must vote for him because the consequences on the other side are too severe.
Here again, that's the sound of fear, what you're hearing right there. You have to vote for Joe Biden, or else Donald Trump, he may come after the DOJ and the FBI. These documents that were unsealed yesterday, according to, again, what Julie Kelly reported, law enforcement officers of the Department of Justice may use deadly force when necessary. And then the DOJ comes out yesterday and says, well, that's true in any case. So you go in, it's a pre-dawn raid. You have guns drawn. Doesn't matter if you're an economic advisor or a former president of the United States. You've got to be prepared for deadly force. They actually brought a medic on the site. They brought a medic to Mar-a-Lago in case there was a shootout, if you can believe this. And then there's Jim Comey saying, hey, we have to do anything in our power to stop Trump. He's Hitler. He's coming after the DOJ. The DOJ's already been taken over by these deep state forces. They want violence. It's just, I mean, it reveals a lot, doesn't it? When you just know, look at January 6th. They wanted the violence. It serves their purpose. So they incite it. They infiltrate, in that case, the protest. And when the violence happened, when the vandalism happened, then they were able to unleash the largest DOJ investigation in history. And then they're bragging every month about how many Jan 6 protesters they've put behind bars. Good for this judge in Florida to unseal these documents and to expose what the Dear Leaders DOJ is getting away with. This is third world activity right here. This is Banana Republic stuff. Forget about Trump, the dictator or authoritarian. We're living under it right now. This is Fox News responding to Comey there, who's supposed to be apolitical, right? I mean, he just worked at the FBI. No, he's a critical player in the Get Trump movement. He's written two anti-Trump books already. And, of course, the networks, as you see, they're happy to give him airtime. This is over at Fox, clip 10.
Well, James Comey looked quite at home over there at MSNBC, right? Because he's as delusional as any other far-left lunatic over there at 30 Rock. Remember, this is the same... what's the word? Clown who held that infamous press conference almost 8 years ago, July 2016, and said while Hillary Clinton basically broke every law when it came to the handling of classified documents during her time as Secretary of State, by keeping those classified documents on a private server in a bathroom, by the way, of an unsecured property, he wasn't going to charge her anyway. And since he was rightly fired by Donald Trump the following year, he's written two anti-Trump books. Showtime gave him a fawning fictional series, and now he's begging people to vote for Joe Biden to save democracy. That scent you smell is a smell of desperation, Carly, because Trump is leading on average in every swing state. He's in a dead heat in traditional states like Virginia and Minnesota. So James Comey, when he talks about saving democracy, you must vote for Joe Biden to save us from Donald Trump. He's talking about saving the party and the person who will continue to only weaponize the FBI, the CIA, the DOJ. I mean, you think about it. The FBI authorized the use of deadly force in the Trump Mar-a-Lago raid over what? Classified documents? I mean, that's the kind of third world stuff Comey wants to continue under a second Biden term.
Comey wants a weaponized DOJ. He was part of it. He was part of it. And Trump rightly fired him and should have fired a lot of other people. And this is what they fear. This is what they fear. Trump coming after them. Alan Dershowitz, he's no friend of Trump, but he was in the courtroom the other day when Judge Mershon got after, I forget, Eastman is the name of the Trump attorney. He was one of the witnesses for Trump's side. And the judge didn't like the way that Eastman looked at him. So then he kicked people out of the court. He flips out, basically. And Dershowitz, he's one of the few that was inside the courtroom. You see, we can't see it because this isn't televised, this particular case. And then, of course, you've got the regime media. They're biased. They're part of the regime. Dershowitz is in there as one of the few witnesses to actually see what happened, and he's just shocked. He says here, I've observed and participated in trials throughout the world. I've seen justice and injustice in China, Russia, Ukraine, England, France, Italy, Israel, as well as in nearly 40 of our 50 states. Alan Dershowitz says, but in my 60 years as a lawyer and law professor, I have never seen a spectacle such as the one I observed sitting in the front row of the courthouse yesterday. He's never seen anything like it. In this case, this is a judge, a bench, a courtroom that's weaponized as well. A conflicted man with a daughter who's a Democrat activist, who's actually working for sitting members of Congress. She's part of the Get Trump movement. It says here, the judge in Donald Trump's trial was an absolute tyrant, though he appeared to the jury to be a benevolent despot. He seemed automatically to be ruling against the defendant at every turn. Many experienced lawyers raised their eyebrows when the judge excluded obviously relevant evidence when offered by the defense, while including irrelevant evidence offered by the prosecution, like for Stormy Daniels to go on and on about this alleged affair. It didn't have anything to do with the clerical error, with marking the funding down in the books. And yet Judge Mershon, I mean, he wanted Stormy to bring out all of the salacious details. That's admissible for sure. It says here, but when the defense's only substantive witness, the experienced attorney Robert Costello, so maybe it wasn't Eastman, I got the name wrong, raised his eyebrows at one of the New York Supreme Court Justice Juan Mershon's rulings, the court went berserk. Losing his cool and showing his thin skin, the judge cleared the courtroom of everyone, including the media. For some reason, I was allowed to stay, and I observed one of the most remarkable wrong-headed biases I've ever seen. The judge actually threatened to strike all of Costello's testimony if he raised his eyebrows again. This is what Trump's team is going up against constantly. You don't dare raise your eyebrows to a dear leader. The public should have been able to see the judge in action, but because the case is not being televised, the public has to rely on the biased reporting of partisan journalists. But the public was even denied the opportunity to hear from journalists who saw the judge in action because he cleared the courtroom. He cleared the courtroom and then went on his little tirade. Here's Dershowitz commenting on what he witnessed. Clip 6.
You were in the courtroom yesterday, and you unleashed about this. Tell us some more. I mean, I don't know. How biased is this story?
Well, he's as biased as I've ever seen a judge be. I was sitting in the front row, and I saw him go berserk when Costello dared to raise his eyebrows after the judge made ruling after ruling after ruling that was unfair. I raised my eyebrows. I stared at the judge. And then the judge did something I have never seen in my 60 years of practicing law all over the world. He said to this key witness, I'm going to strike your testimony and not allow you to testify if you ever look at me again that way. Mm. Now, Donald Trump didn't do anything wrong. That would be depriving Trump of his right to a defense under the Sixth Amendment. This judge in one day violated more constitutional rights and made more unlawful rulings in the 8 hours I was in the courtroom that day than I've seen in months and months and months of trials. I don't know whether the judge is influenced by his daughter making money off a Trump conviction or whether he just comes to the case with an extreme bias. But the way he treated that lawyer, Costello, I have never seen a judge do that to a distinguished lawyer who used to be the head, deputy head of the criminal division of the Justice Department.
Here they are just trampling all over the Constitution, even as they say Trump wants to come back and terminate the Constitution. There's some real demonic forces at work here. And God says that their coup is going to fail in the end. You look at the power that they have at the moment, it may not seem like that, but again, you sense the fear and the desperation now in their voices as we're getting close to the month of June. We're not that far away from the November election. Donald Trump's campaigning in the Bronx. I mean, he's campaigning. He believes New York's in play. And listen to AOC, by the way, as she tries to dismiss this and then says, she says the quiet part out loud. She tells you in one little soundbite what the whole purpose for this lawfare is. Clip 12.
And by the way, he's doing it in the South Bronx, not to make a point, but because he's got court and the man practically has the legal version of an ankle bracelet around him and he can't leave the five boroughs because he always has to be in court.
Right. He's only going to go to the Bronx because, well, he's got an ankle bracelet on. He can't campaign anywhere else. That's the whole point of this lawfare. That's the whole point of this crazy case. These people, they're desperate. They're afraid. And they're also very arrogant. And they're saying it now. They're saying the quiet part out loud. They're saying, look, the lawfare is not working. We can't get him into prison. I gave you some of this from CNN a week or two back, talking about how that now here comes the Russia collusion hoax all over again. The Wall Street Journal's covering it this time. Get ready for the most polluted election in American memory. I mean, is it possible to get any worse than what we've seen over the last 8 years? Get ready. It is possible. It quotes CNN, U.S. intelligence officials are watching closely to see if the United States' support for Ukraine will lead the Russian government to take more risks in potentially interfering in the 2024 presidential election. This is coming from the deep state that Jim Comey loves. Yeah, Russian interference. We're anticipating it this time. Everything was perfect in 2020. And then the Russians interfered in 2016. I mean, that's facts. That's just facts. Here they are. No facts, no evidence. Just put it out there. Just put it out there. And then the regime, as in the regime media, they'll take it and run with it. CNN's happy to report on that. CNN said Russia could be motivated to more aggressively meddle in the 2024 election than it did in 2020. And then this journal piece says, ask yourself, which has a bigger effect on our politics? A Russian propaganda video among millions of social media videos posted daily, or the New York Times and MSNBC touting the video to their influential audiences last week as a Kremlin effort to inflame U.S. politics. I mean, it just shows you how corrupt the media are. One little video, I mean, what did they say in 2016? A few little Facebook posts supposedly tilted the election in the direction of Donald Trump. It's not that. It's Obama's deep state. It's Obama's DOJ and FBI, and you can throw in the intel community, that's spreading propaganda and lies. That's what causes the real damage. It's Obama's deep state that's censoring the truth, that's blotting out Donald Trump from Twitter, things like that. And Comey's worried about if Trump returns. They're afraid, you see, of Trump returning and firing some of these treasonous agents. They're traitors. They're shredding the Constitution. They're terminating the Constitution. It's like Alan Dershowitz says. I mean, this judge, he violated more constitutional laws than just in that one proceeding than Dershowitz has ever witnessed in a court case. You know, speaking of the media, let me just see if I want to finish this. Matt Taibbi, he's again, like Dershowitz, he comes more from the left, but he's one of the few from the left who's at least somewhat honest. And he was talking about just how the media, how they've changed in the last several decades. Listen to this exchange. It's from a podcast with John Anderson, I believe, clip 5.
How do you see the role of the media in today's fractured democracies going forward?
Well, I think in my father's era and the 60s and 70s, journalism for a long time in America was more of a trade than a profession. It was not uncommon for journalists to be the sons and daughters of, plumbers and electricians. It was a working class or to middle class vocation. People came up through the business as paper boys or paper kids or in the printers. And in my lifetime, that significantly changed, and it became much more of an upper class vocation where rich kids who went to the Ivy League schools went into journalism, I think in large part because of movies like All the President's Men that sort of cast journalism as a sexy profession. And as a result, I think the consequence of that is that journalists used to be sort of on the side of ordinary people. They were seen as kind of a check on power. Now, culturally, journalists have evolved to being sort of defenders of the establishment and the status quo, which is one of the reasons why I think there's been such a kind of catastrophic loss of trust in the business in this country anyway. There's a real divide between kind of ordinary people and the press that didn't exist when I went into the business the first time.
That's an excellent analysis. They used to be seen as chat, and now there's been bias in media for decades, but just look at how they're covering up the truth. Or like Bill Maher said to Anderson Cooper the other day, they're not telling the whole story. Joy Behar, basically, she had an exchange with Bill Maher as well, where she said, she admitted, I mean, there's some things I don't want to say because I don't want to hurt the regime. She didn't use the word regime, but Bill Maher said, he responded by saying, well, I'm going to say what's on my mind. And I'm, you know, my audience, whether it's a right-leaning, left-leaning audience, at least they know it's from me. I mean, he's basically, in a nice way, smacking her down. She's admitting she's selective in how she reports on anything. Of course, you can't really even call her a reporter. But just going back to Taibbi's point, I mean, it used to be that they would step up and defend the ordinary man. The ordinary citizens, now they certainly don't, they don't keep the powers that be in check. They're the mouthpiece for the regime. They're out there spewing the propaganda. Taibbi made another point about just how the Democrat strategy here, again, you see those round tables and you know he didn't get 81 million votes. But then you look at their strategy and they're not even trying to reach out to middle America or the red states or the red counties. They're not even trying. Listen to clip 4.
That has not been the strategy of Democrats since 2016. There's been really no effort at all to kind of reach out and even understand what's going on in red state America. It's been sort of constant demonization of Trump, which on one level I kind of get because it animates their following, but you're basically foregoing massive amounts of votes. And I also just morally don't think it's the right thing to do if you're leading a country. Like, you have to show that you're interested in being their president, too.
Constant demonization of Trump. Trump is Hitler. Trump's guilty of rape. Trump is Caesar. Trump's going to terminate the Constitution. Trump's coming after the DOJ. Trump's coming after the FBI. You see how they react. The regime, top to bottom, you see how they react when their control on power is threatened. When we come back, we've got the world premiere, our latest promotional video for Celtic Throne, which launches its summer tour tomorrow evening in Shreveport, Louisiana. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on the Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need the Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need the Trumpet Daily. Only the Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to TrumpetDaily.com.
Professional show that was on par with anything I've ever seen.
Amazing. Congratulations on an amazing performance. I'm delighted to be part of it.
Inspiring this nation, and that's something that we need right now.
There you go. Celtic Throne kicking off its fifth summer tour tomorrow night at, where is it? Shreveport, Louisiana. Just go to CelticThrone.com and you can get all the information that you need to secure tickets at Shreveport. Following that, May 26th, Baton Rouge in Louisiana as well. Then Mobile, Alabama. That's May the 28th, next Tuesday, I believe. And then they'll be in Florida as soon as next Thursday, I believe. Fort Myers, Florida, Sarasota, Florida, and then Jacksonville, Florida. For all of you people watching the show coming from the southeast of the United States, now is your chance to come out and see this wonderful performance. And in the case of me, maybe in Florida, you'll get a chance to see me as well. CelticThrone.com. All right, we've talked in recent shows about having just a greater sense of urgency as we draw near to the return of Jesus Christ. My father, in the Hebrews booklet, you can get to all of our literature, by the way, at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet website, or you can call our 800 number, 1-866-930-3024. And the literature that we offer is offered without cost or obligation. In the Hebrews booklet, my father says here, Paul had an eternal focus, an intense urgency, and in-time urgency to finish God's work. Paul thought he was living in the last days, the time we're living in now. But that period in the first century was only a type of what we are experiencing today. And you can see similar statements such as that in quite a few of my father's writings, quite a few of his booklets, because he's commenting on whether it's the minor prophets, the former prophets in the Old Testament, or Paul's writings. You see in all of them, you see a tremendous sense of urgency. And here we are, like he brings out, we're living in the last days. Paul thought that Christ was going to return in his day. He was a little bit off on the timing, but that didn't take away from his urgency. That didn't take away from him pleading with God's people, particularly in the case of the Hebrew people. You can see there in Hebrews 5 that He says at one point, I have so much more to tell you about Jesus Christ, but you've become dull. You're not ready for the strong meat. I've got to go back and teach you some of the first principles. It's just so easy to lose some of that hunger, that thirsting for knowledge, for God's purpose, for God's plan. This is in another booklet, The Lion Has Roared. My father asked, do you and I have the urgency necessary to deliver God's message? Our head is rushing along, pushing this work very hard because of the urgency of the times. You heard in that little promotional video, General Michael Flynn, who watched Celtic Throne last summer, and he said, look, this is a message. This is an uplifting, hopeful message that this world needs, that this nation needs right now. There's a wonderful uplifting message in Celtic Throne. It's that way with everything that God's church produces. Every booklet, every program, every study, all the content that we make available at thetrumpet.com. This is from Colossians 3. It just says in these first couple of verses, tells us where our focus needs to be in these last days. Verse 1, it says, if you then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sits on the right hand of God. Seek those things that are above. Jesus talked about lifting up your eyes, setting your heart, your mind on God's eternal purpose. Paul's saying essentially the same thing. Here in Colossians 3, my father, he gave a Key of David program some years ago on setting your affection on the things above. And your affection, it's just talking about the mind. Set your mind on spiritual things, especially as you see a world in turmoil, especially as you see a nation in crisis. verse 2, it says, set your affection on things above, not on the things on the earth. Learn to think the way God thinks. Verse 2, well, I just read it. Look at this from a royal vision. My father, I think this was the article that we converted that old Key of David program into. Commenting on Colossians 3 here, it says, we need to keep our minds on the Father and Jesus Christ. Set your affection where the Father and the Son are set. Christ is risen and seated at the Father's right hand. And they both tell us, this is where we want you to set your affection. This is where your real passion needs to be. We've talked recently about just being more passionate. Just pouring our hearts into this work, this end of the end time work. God wants us to be passionate about the things that He's passionate about. He wants us to be excited about what He's excited about. That same royal vision. He goes, this is not easy. How can you set your affection so ardently on something that is above, something you cannot physically see? It isn't something we naturally do. We must work hard at this. It's not something that just comes natural, this kind of godly passion and emotion, this kind of zeal for God's work, this kind of love for God's family. That's why we have to go to that source above for all of these things, for His love. Paul said to Timothy, God hasn't given us the spirit of fear, but He's given us the spirit of power and love and a sound mind. All of those things come from God. And here's why our relationship with God is so important. In a recent doctrines lecture, I referred to this 1974 article that Herbert Armstrong wrote, Why Did God Put You in His Church? You know, we often talk about the work of the church as exactly that. It's a work. God brings, He brings people scattered from all over the world. He brings them into His church to help support that work. This is a church unlike any other church on earth. It's not about just establishing a building on a street corner somewhere and trying to attract as many people into the congregation. God has to bring us in. John 6:44. And as I say, they're scattered. There aren't that, I suppose the Edmond congregation is the biggest one that we have. But even there, I mean, we don't fill out Armstrong Auditorium. I've been to congregations where there's just 10 or 12 people, in some cases smaller than that. But they're dedicated. They're loyal. They're supportive. They're earnestly drawing near to God. They're excited. They're passionate about supporting God's work. You're going to see, if you go to any of those Celtic Throne performances, you may well meet someone that came from 7-8 hours, drove for 7 or 8 hours just to see the show. We had someone come from Idaho to the Edmund performance that we had together with Dinesh D'Souza the other day. A couple weeks ago, I guess. I mean, that's some kind of dedication to travel halfway across the country just to support God's work, basically. You don't see that in the world today. God brings us into His church, well, to learn. We're in training. He needs teachers. We're the teachers of tomorrow. We're going to have to have programs like this all over the world where we're educating people how to live the way of give, how to live according to God's law of love. We're in training, but we're also called or brought into the church to help support the work. And Herbert Armstrong, in that article in 1974 and elsewhere, he talked about how that this is one reason during his ministry that there were so many, more than 100,000 in the church worldwide, hundreds of ministers and so on. I mean, we're just a mere fraction of that today because of the great falling away. Satan has fundamentally transformed the worldwide church of God, or what used to be the worldwide church of God. We've seen spiritual destruction all over the place. People lost their passion, their zeal. This is from a Good News article that Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1984. He says, the moral for you is this. In your personal life, in all that you do, make God the head of it and rely solely and altogether on Him and on Him alone. Then it will be a success. I gave you that quote the other day where I said, you know, quoting Mr. Armstrong, just let God have His way in your life. Or to take this language, make God the head of whatever it is you do, and then you'll be sure that it will come out successfully, or it'll be a success. Otherwise, it will fail, Mr. Armstrong says. Unless God builds the house, they labor in vain that build it, and whatever plant my heavenly Father has not planted shall be rooted up. We want God there at the start. We want God there from beginning to end. But surely He's got to be there at the start. You just look at the example of Herbert Armstrong's ministry. I mean, he died in the faith at 93 years of age. He wrote Mystery of the Ages, one of the books we have here on the table. He wrote Mystery of the Ages, his greatest work, in the last year of his life. And then you can see some of this history in Raising the Ruins. We talk about his last will and testament, his last will. His final will for the church was to just give what little he had right back to the worldwide work of spreading this message, this gospel truth, right around the world. Preaching as a witness primarily, and then letting God do His part to draw people to Jesus Christ. John 6 and verse 44. I guess my point with respect to Mr. Armstrong is the man never did retire, did he? He just kept right on working until his body gave out, until his body stopped working. He was wholehearted all the way through to the end of his physical life. Notice Matthew 12. I think I can squeeze these in. Matthew 12, verse 46. It says here, while he yet talked to the people, behold, his mother and his brethren stood without, desiring to speak with him. And then one said unto him, behold, your mother, your family is outside, desiring to speak with you. But he answered, and he said unto him that told him, who is my mother, and who are my brethren? Where is my family? You're talking about family. Verse 49 says, and he stretched forth his hand toward his disciples, and he said, behold, my mother and my brethren, or behold, my mom and my family, for whosoever shall do the will of my Father, which is in heaven, the same is my brother and sister and mother. This is God's family we're talking about. We may be scattered, but we're connected, we're united, we're together. If we're fulfilling God's will, if we're out there doing the will of the Father, then that makes us God's family. This is not heresy to say that. I mean, God is a family. We have a booklet, by the way, that goes by that name. You can read all about it in Mystery of the Ages. God reproducing Himself. And it starts small. Romans 8 talks about Christ being the firstborn among many brethren, many family members. There's a time order to this plan, this purpose. That too is explained in Mystery of the Ages. But what a glorious plan and purpose to set our minds on, set that affection on the things above. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show. And we'll see you tomorrow.